You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, the Beautiful Game Network, and Roughneck Scars. My good friend Daniel Sperry, how did you experience the Dan Matt Derby on Sunday, and do you have any hot take predictions for March Madness?
Hot take predictions? I don't know if it's much of a hot take, because Duke's going to win the whole thing. Zion's going to run rampant. Have you seen this where they asked Zlatan Ibrahimovic to like enter a bracket, and they gave him a bracket like to, I forget where what TV company it was. I'm going to see if I can find it though. But he literally filled in the champions circle with Zion's name and sent it back to them. And so that was it. Like, didn't put any teams, anything else. He just wrote Zion in the champions spot and said, all right, here you go. Which is a very Zlatan thing to do. But I think Zion will go Zlatan on everybody else. That might be me being a little bit of a Duke stan, but I'm quite excited to watch this year's NCAA tournament. I really am excited for one matchup I can't wait for is the rematch of the 2009 round of 32 matchup between Villanova and my St. Mary's Gales. If you remember that one, Nova was like a team that some people like picked to win the whole thing. They were like an upset, a two seed that was going to kind of go through everybody and get to the Final Four. I think Barack Obama even had them, either in the Final Four or into the championship in like the bracket that he chose to do. And then they preemptively got blasted by my St. Mary's Gales that year. So a lot of fun, a lot of memories. They're rematching again. They're both very good teams, and I'm pulling for my Gales to do it again. But Dan Matt Derby. I experienced it on my couch. I made a sandwich, pork tenderloin, and some bagel. That was pretty much it. I mean, I watched it. I tweeted it from the account. And, when Johnny Russell scored his goal, I let out a big whoop and a wow. Cause I was just, Sporting Kansas City have not scored on set pieces in a while. That was one thing Peter Vermees said to me afterwards when I asked him about that moment and Johnny Russell stepping up there. And he said, you know, we haven't scored enough on set pieces over the last few years. And those free kicks, Graham Zusi's hit the bar on them like three or four times. And he hit the bar again, was it last Sunday when Marco Fabian got sent off, on a free kick. And then he had one that was saved, incredibly, in the CONCACAF Champions League game last Thursday. It was destined for the upper corner and the goalkeeper made an amazing save on it. So, there's frustration, and he was frustrated about it too, even afterwards. He's just like, I'm sick and tired of them not going in, because he's hit the bar on them so many times and just not getting the chance. So for Johnny to come up in that moment and hit that ball, and, you know, there's, you understand on the Rapids side, there was a Rapids fan, who got into it with Tim Howard after that. Tim Howard dives. He's not staving that. I mean, that was placed perfectly into the upper corner with pace, whipped in there, tucked in. I believe it hit the side netting before it hit the back netting. From that angle, there's so much movement on that. Tim Howard's not touching that. So, incredible strike from Johnny Russell, saves them. I'd say they weren't dangerous enough. But overall, for Sporting Kansas City, at least they weren't as dangerous, but considering what they've gone through and the gauntlet that they've gone through at the beginning, of this season, to end it off with a road point, against a fairly decent Rapids team. I think they were pretty well bunkered in for it, but, what I saw from Sporting Kansas City was it was good enough considering their circumstances. They haven't won in Colorado since 2014, actually. So it's been, they don't win there a whole lot. So getting the point there and escaping was a good thing for them.
I thought it was a really cagey affair. I thought it was really open and fun and exciting with both teams going for it in the first 20 minutes. And then after that, I think both teams just decided that they weren't going to get beat up the middle. You saw, the diamond, as I wrote about from a column today, on Last Word on Soccer. The diamond kind of truncated itself and at times was looking more like a 4-2-2-2 with Jack Price being more of the on the number 6 side of the number 8 to number 6 to number 10 spectrum back there with Benny Feilhaber. And at times it completely flattened out defensively. You know, there weren't really a whole lot of chances after the first 30 to 40 minutes or so. You know, it was a lot of individual moments like you had with Johnny Russell or, you know, really mistakes. You know, Roger Espinoza hits a post you know, on a really bad outlet pass by Tim Howard that gets turned over, and then Diego Rubio gets his first goal for the Rapids against his former club, doing the Pan's Labyrinth eye hand monster celebration kind of, or maybe it was an eagle. I'm not sure. That's what I saw when I saw him do that celebration. So his first goal for the Rapids, and ironically against his former team, a team that, you know, Rubio, I think in his heart of hearts, maybe thought didn't always give him the opportunity, or that he thought, you know, he warranted more playing time given his level of production. So the only thing that I'll say on the March Madness bracket side, Dan, I have a really, really hilarious story from grad school. We did a whole bracket with everybody in my lab, and we had one Chinese graduate foreign exchange student who did not know anything about the NCAA tournament bracket system at all. He was familiar with basketball, but nobody really told him. He didn't really understand college basketball, or that, like, he didn't know that, like, Duke had a really good program, for example, or, like, UCLA had a lot of basketball history, for example. And he thought the higher number team was the better team. So he had 4 16 seeds upsetting number 1 seeds that prior to last year when I think UMBC beat the University of Virginia, question mark. You know, no 16 seed, at least in the men's bracket, had ever upset a number 1 seed. So make sure you get those number right, folks, for those of you who don't pay attention to college basketball a whole lot or don't know the team names that much. You know, the lower number team is the, generally speaking, or at least on paper, should be the better team. I am a big fan of those 5-12 upsets, though. Let's move on to other interesting stuff that happened, Dan. And I think we have to give some due to the MLS debutants. FC Cincinnati gets their first win in MLS play, and it's their first game at Nippert Stadium in 2019. A comprehensive 3-0 victory over the Portland Timbers. Kendall Waston scores the opening goal of the game in a fabulous, I think, a Homer Simpson reference with his celebration. You had Alan Cruz with a nice little backflip, back heel as well. You had a red card, unfortunately, for the Portland Timbers, so a little bit of chaos there, but I think an absolute fantastic experience, and certainly one everybody in the orange and blue in their mile-long march-up, and everybody who hit the Bailey is going to remember for the rest of your lives. Your thoughts on FC Cincinnati, you know, being undefeated in MLS home play?
Yeah, it was impressive, and it felt like it was coming. I mean, they put in a much better performance in week 2 in Atlanta. It was a bit more pragmatic, but all of a sudden you saw with Kenny Saif on the field, you really saw them kind of open up. I think Darren Maddox is really good for them. I'd almost like to see them play a 4-4-2 more often instead of their 4-2-3-1 and just throwing Adi alone up top. I really do like Adi, and I know he prefers to play kind of as a lone striker, but they don't have the wing play to kind of give him the type of service that he would need. So you saw when Maddox came in, he was really able to stretch the game because he moves so much more. His work ethic along that back line, I won't say is better, but he just works hard. He's a very hard worker off the ball. And I think that was one thing that jumped out to me. And even when he came into the match and Lama cutting in, you know, kind of moving inside a little bit more as a fullback overlaps. I mean, it was very nice to see some of the things that stuck out at the end of that Atlanta game when they really started to look decent. And then this week to see them really put it all together on home turf, literal turf, and get the job done. You know, Portland, you know, we already knew what their record going into the game was without Diego Chara. Honestly, I don't know if Diego Chara would have helped them much. Their back line has been a mess regardless of Diego Chara's existence on the field. So, you know, kind of a bad situation for Portland to walk into. It was one that they were probably never going to win, but FC Cincinnati looked very good. They did a good job of getting things done. They looked more adventurous going forward. And you saw some really nice moments. I think Alan Cruz is going to turn out to be a really, really good player in this league. We've already seen him step up big time defensively in that midfield. And then on top of it, you've seen, what he can do, you know, moving in attack as well, as he's kind of got that bit of a bit of that game to him as well. May not be your very attacking minded number eight, but he's going to pop up and give them goals. Kind of reminds me a little bit of a better goal scoring kind of a Carlos Guerrero kind of a player. So I believe he wasn't available for their opener, if I'm correct, because he was still he had just come off of CONCACAF stuff with Herediano. And once they were done against Atlanta, that was part of the deal, is that he would play the round of 16 with Herediano before he moved to join FC Cincinnati. So after they had been eliminated by Atlanta, then he couldn't make that home opener, or not the season opener against Cincinnati. And that's where they got destroyed, was in the midfield, and they were all out of shape. All of a sudden, Alan Cruz comes into that game or comes into this team, and they've short him. One goal against in a game against Atlanta and Portland. I think that's a pretty good stat line there for that FC Cincinnati midfield and back line. So he's going to provide a whole lot for them. Kendall Waston's playing great, and out into a much better situation, I think, for him. So the FC Cincinnati team's interesting. I don't know if they're great or good, but it was a very good home performance. It was a complete performance. It was what you want to see out of a team that's kind of going in and playing at home like that. I don't know how many teams like ever lose their like stadium opener kind of a thing. It'd have to be a really, really terrible expansion team, because I believe Toronto FC even won their home opener, and that was like one of their only wins that year. So, and they were one of the worst expansion teams ever. So, you know, it's just one of those things of like, you expect FC Cincinnati to do that. But they also see a lot of nice things that happen in that game, and I'm really looking forward to seeing them, as the season advances.
Well said, Dan. I believe Minnesota United lost there, or at least at the University of Minnesota's Gridiron Football Stadium. They lost that home opener.
Well, they got 6-1, wrecked by Atlanta.
To Atlanta. But you know, we'll see what they end up doing when they open up Allianz Field. But in any case, let's move on to the U.S. national team, Dan. We will briefly, listeners, recap the state of Greg Berhalter's 24-man roster for the upcoming friendly this Thursday against Ecuador. We will be doing a pick'em for that game. But Dan, you know, I look at this roster, I kind of see, there's three different groups I'm putting guys into. Ones who are young, up-and-coming talent, a lot of European-based players who I'm really, really excited about, some who've been young players in MLS with varying levels of success and not a whole lot of U.S. national team experience, and then a couple of the older guard. You know, I think, you know, Giassi's Artis is an old man in this forward core. A lot of guys who I'm excited about, but I'm not sure, other than Jordan Morris with what he's done coming back from injury, I'm not sure how I feel about them at the national team level right now. I think this midfield core is absolutely stacked. Everyone's favorite player to hate, Michael Bradley, is in that group. And then you've got an interesting core as well on the defensive side. Omar Gonzalez in that group, but then also Nick Lima, Matt Miazga, John Brooks, Aaron Long, DeAndre Yedlin. You know, there is a defensive core there that I think fans can get excited about. I'll start with you and the goalkeepers, because I know you've got some opinions on that. Your general take on the U.S. national team roster and what messages Greg Berhalter is or isn't sending with those selections.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's what's interesting to look is to see where the guys that you're like, okay, why aren't these guys here and where are they? Are they at home sitting on their couch, or are they training with their MLS team that decided to play a dumb midweek game or a dumb international break game? And then they weren't called into the national team, or are they with that U23, U20 team? I think there's a lot of really intriguing pieces on both that U20 and the U23 team. I believe Josh Sargent, correct me if I'm wrong, is Josh Sargent and Tim, I know Tim Way is with the U23 team. But Josh Sargent, is he with the U20s or is he with the U23s?
I believe he's with the U20s.
Okay. So, I mean, he obviously is able to prepare for that U20 World Cup that is upcoming for that group. There are numerous MLS Academy kids that we've seen throughout the last few weeks, homegrowns and stuff like that, or last couple of years at least, that are part of that group. But at the same time, you know, you see, so those are the kind of guys that you're, you know, if you're looking for guys that have been in this picture, and are, I think for the most part, he got it right. I think the big question for, like, the two names that I circle are one, Omar Gonzalez. One, because I have not paid attention to what Atlas are doing, in Liga MX and whether he is playing or not. Just because they aren't one of the Liga MX teams that I really care about. I watch a lot of Liga MX. I watch Tijuana for the sake of Pareja. They're actually doing pretty well. Side note, but, you have Tijuana. And then I watch a lot of Monterrey. Tigres are always a blast. And so is, watching León at the current state is there because they've been wrecking shop, this league. But, you know, so I don't know what he's doing a whole lot. But I do really like the inclusion of John Brooks. I really like the inclusion of Sean Johnson in this national team. I think Sean Johnson is a very, very good goalkeeper. That doesn't get, you know, cause everyone talks about the guys that are on the fringe in MLS that, okay. It's not, you know, Bill Hamid in this roster kind of a thing. The big question mark that I have is why on earth he brought in Jesse Gonzalez. I don't think Jesse Gonzalez has done anything in his MLS play the last few years that has shown he deserves to still get call-ups. You know, Tim Melia, Stefan Fry by far, outweigh him and are their national team eligible as well. So I don't get the Jesse Gonzalez love. When I saw that, I was a little frustrated, a little annoyed. Tim Melia deserves it. You know, Bill Hamid deserves it because he's been very good to start the season, though he hasn't had a whole lot of work to do. And then Stefan Fry deserves it. The guy should have gotten goalkeeper of the year last year. So if you're not going to have Zach Steffen, who's probably easily the U.S. number one for me right now, you're not going to have Brad Guzan in this roster. Then why the heck are you putting Jesse Gonzalez into the roster? That's probably my big bone to pick. If I look at this entire roster, also Daniel Lovett's question there. I don't know how, you know, suited he is for left back at international play, but I also understand that there's a lot of these guys that he felt that Barhalter felt did well in the January camp, like Daniel Lovitz, like Aaron Lawn, like Nick Lima, like, Corey Baird, guys that he liked and saw Jonathan Lewis. These are guys that did well in the January camp and deserve a second look against a higher level opponent. They're getting that now. I think that's what this is. I think you should care when we get to this roster. Towards June, July, and we start looking towards, Gold Cup stuff or even in, you know, May, April kind of a thing. We look at the roster when it comes to the Gold Cup times and the build up, the real build up to the Gold Cup. Then I will question the inclusion of, you know, some of those guys over a Tim Weah or over a Josh Sargent or over, other guys that deserve to be within the picture. But I don't know if I'm going to do too much more hand wringing over this roster outside of the Jesse Gonzalez inclusion, just because I don't think his form in MLS has shown that he deserves a sniff anywhere close. I mean, if you're going to do a token invite, might as well invite Nick Raimondo one last time kind of a thing. So, there's plenty of better options in the MLS that they could have picked for that goalkeeper, but, chose to go with Jesse Gonzalez. Don't know why. But thankfully this roster doesn't matter too much.
I am really curious to see who Greg Berhalter is going to choose as far as the old guard, the Omar Gonzalez's, the Matt Beislers. I assume they're safe enough at right back with DeAndre Yedlin that, you know, they're not going to need to call on Graham Zusi with any regularity in the future. Certainly Michael Bradley, Josie Altidore up top, you know, I think was maybe the one striker, at least of the MLS players, who wasn't included in this roster. But what role does Omar Gonzalez have with this squad? You mentioned, Dan, if I'm not mistaken, Atlas is doing pretty, pretty bad. I can't remember if Liga MX has, you know, if we're still in the moratorium on Pro Rel because of, you know, a year or maybe 2 years ago that there was some concerns about Chivas de Guadalajara going down. If I remember correctly, Gonzalez is actually on loan to Atlas from Pachuca. And I think his contract actually runs out this summer. This might be Greg Berhalter doing him a solid, saying, hey, you're a veteran player, come and help the kids, I'll put you in one of these cupcake friendlies, for example, and then maybe that'll help you with a move towards your new contract. I presume that there's going at least one MLS team out there that has such a need at center back that they'd be willing to throw targeted allocation money at Omar Gonzalez, and he'd be willing to take it, probably. I do not think that that would be the Galaxy, just with where their financial situation is and the players that they've already brought in to try and address that situation. So that's what I think of Omar Gonzalez. But, you know, what role does he have? If Omar Gonzalez is just the wily veteran who's supposed to be a good backup, then I think you're okay. You know, and then, you know, go with John Brooks, Aaron Long, Matt Miazga, you know, Tim Ream. Take any one of your pick up that group. I'm okay with it. But I'm really curious to see, you know, is this something that's going to become a regularity? And how much is he going to rely on that? Because, you know, I think we saw with Jurgen Klinsmann into a much more significant extent, not Michael Bradley. Who am I thinking? Bruce Arena, excuse me. Just the team be too reliant on some of these veterans. I do think that Michael Bradley, at least from a mentorship standpoint, from a veteran leadership standpoint, from a here are the mistakes I have made as a leader in the midfield for the U.S. national team, will still have a role in this upcoming World Cup qualifying cycle. You know, I think there will be times when it will be necessary in order to try and get a result and advance this national team in World Cup qualifying, in a Gold Cup, possibly another Copa America, that it will be necessary to play him and start him and have him play a significant role. I don't know that by the time we get to, you know, mid-fall 2022 for the Qatar World Cup, how significant of a role that he's going to play or what he's even going to be able to do. How does Greg Berhalter get the most that he can out of Michael Bradley, both in terms of a player standpoint, in terms of a value added around the other assets that he has with the team, and do that in a way such that inevitably when Michael Bradley has to no longer be a national team player by choice, by injury, by, you know, fans booing him too much and him just being like, I'm out, guys. You know, phase him out such that that is not immediately a gaping hole. For me, that's maybe not in midfield, just because I think Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, Christian Roldan, Christian Pulisic, you know, take any one of the seven midfielders you have from that group, Dan, and if the U.S. had to play a Gold Cup final tomorrow, I would be comfortable with any one of those seven in the midfield as long as they were playing their natural role. I might not put Christian Roldan at the 10, but as a number 8 in a 4-2-3-1, I'm not feeling bad about that. I'd say the same thing about Sebastian Lletget. I'd certainly say the same thing about Tyler Adams, and I would say the same thing about Michael Bradley. More so on the forward role, similar to my concerns about Michael Bradley and what is his role, how will he be inevitably be phased out over the course of the World Cup cycle, or at the very least play a significantly lesser role in 2022, should he make the team, than he certainly did as the captain and the main starting central midfielder in 2014, is what's happening with Jozy Altidore's situation. Obviously, you know, he's, I can't remember if it happened or it is happening, but, you know, he's set to resign with Toronto FC, last I saw with the rumors. And after that, there's a huge drop off. You know, if something happens to Michael Bradley tomorrow, I still think the midfield core is going to be okay. I don't know who that starting forward is for the U.S. right now, or that I have confidence in that person based on precedent at the senior national team level, like I do with Jozy Altidore, assuming that he's healthy and fully fit. So I'm really curious to see what happens with this forward core, who ends up getting the start, who ends up, you know, showing and producing. You know, we didn't see a whole lot from Christian Ramirez, I think, in the friendly game. So I'd really like to see him, get a little bit, you know, see what he's able to do. I've loved what I've seen from Paul Arriola and Jordan Morris. And, you know, Jossie Zardes has been off to a good start. Still not sure how high his ceiling is at the national team level, but he's one of Greg Berhalter's guys. And if Greg Berhalter can take, you know, him off the scrap heap from the LA Galaxy and turn him into a 16 goal scorer in MLS, I have to believe that he's going to be able to at least, you know, put up goals, you know, against reasonably good competition, in a Gold Cup. Let's move on to maybe the bigger picture for this team. We've talked enough about the roster. What are we looking for in this international window? Obviously, it was an MLS heavy roster with a bunch of experimentation and Berhalter's debut in January. Now, this is, you know, one of the last few windows that they'll have before Greg Berhalter needs to make his decision as far as the Gold Cup. How should we be viewing this in the context of the Gold Cup? And how will Greg Berhalter be viewing this in the context of the 2019 Gold Cup?
Yeah, I think, well, January camp, we got to see the overall kind of form of how he wants to play. Now, I think it's now what we're looking for is how do the first teamers look in it? Is it going to be difficult for them to pick up, or is it going to take a while? I would like to think that it won't take them a while. A good system, you can plug in a relatively, like, you know, a player in a good system that constantly makes, that's good at making players better than they really are, kind of a thing. Like, I mean, Peter Vermees arguably does that. You know, Berhalter did that with the Columbus Crew. You know, there's a constant ability to put guys in the right position to succeed. And I think that is something that I am really intrigued about, is seeing how it works. How does Tyler Adams work, look in this right wing back central mid hybrid kind of a thing? How does Weston McKennie and Pulisic and Adams all on the same field in a fluid, under, you know, a system that is very clear? They have an idea. How do they all look? How do they link up with Giassi's artist? How do they get him the service that he needs? Those are the kind of things, Paul Areola, those are the kind of things that, like, I am really looking forward to seeing, out of this group, because, you know, while we're going to get our run out of Corey Baird, we'll get our run out of Nick Lima. What does Yedlin look like as a winger? You know, those kind of things. That's more or less what I'm intrigued about. I'm excited to see that. Because I think that is going to be, a big piece of them going forward, and how quickly do they grasp their system? Because if they don't grasp it well, then we're looking at a very interesting Gold Cup. If they look lost, I was sick and tired of seeing just lost and just kind of like, not sure what I'm trying to be doing right now. Performances under Sarakhan and even at times Bruce Arena. So, to see the good players, the top notch players that we have within this player pool, into a system that so far looks and sounds and feels competent, to put them into a competent system, and how competent do they look? That's probably what I care about the most. I mean, results be damned. I want it to look and feel good. If the chances are, you know, it's just a half inch off kind of a thing, or, you know, there's just slightly out of sync, is understandable, but to have the overall look and feel and the beginning signs of execution of how things are supposed to be under this system and everything that they're going to play and what Greg Berhalter wants to do, that's probably what I'm most excited about. And really, how does he utilize Christian Pulisic? I think that's the number one thing on my list. How is he going to use him? Is he going to use him centrally? Is he going to use him wide? Is he going to float? What is he going to do with Pulisic? And I think that's the number one question I have. I think Christian looks great on either side of it, wherever you want to put him. But how does he use him, and how does he get the best out of Christian Pulisic? It's probably the number one thing I'm looking for. Then the system, and then, you know, how do some of the fringe guys from January that quote unquote won January camp, how do they look going forward? So, we'll see how it all plays out. But like I said, results be damned. I just want to see, I want good answers to those three things. Is kind of what I'm looking for.
Well said, Dan. You took most of the bullet points I had to talk about. I guess the only other thing I'll add, maybe a little bit more on the micro scale than you did, is relationships, relationships, relationships. Who are going to be the starters at center back, and what is their relationship going to be? You know, Matt Miazga left, you know, relatively early, that I'm not sure he and Aaron Long had maybe the rapport that they did when they were both playing at Red Bull Arena together. You know, we've seen at times, both with the previous two managers, you know, that there, you know, was so much shuffling of the center back role. You could make an argument the only real coherent center back tandem that you had in the last World Cup cycle was Omar Gonzalez and Matt Beisler, which, you know, it'd be nice if, you know, I'm pretty sure those two, their first start together was the 1-1 draw at the Azteca going into the 2014 World Cup, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, I'd like to see who's starting there, what's that relationship like, and how do they ultimately get on, and is that an experimentation, or is Greg Berhalter saying, you're my guys, figure it out so that I know you aren't a liability going into the Gold Cup. Similarly, what does the midfield look like in terms of shape, in terms of individual roles and relationships in there? You know, obviously Weston McKennie and Tyler Adams are going to have a rapport playing, you know, at younger levels for the U.S. national team, and then certainly meeting and being familiar with each other in Germany. I would include Christian Pulisic into that relationship as well. But, you know, how many times have Will Trapp and Christian Roldan played against each other? Are they really that familiar with each other as players? I'm really curious to see about that. And ultimately, who's starting up at forward, and what kind of rapport is there at all with those players who overlap with each other? You know, if I can come out of these two friendlies saying that I feel better about who's potentially starting at center back and what that pairing looks like, if I can feel better about some of the intricacies and the link up in the midfield, I'm feeling great. If I can get both of those and a striker pair that I like in terms of a tandem between the two, then I'm feeling really, really great about this going into the Gold Cup. Let's close out. I'll give you the last word on this segment, Dan. Jason Kreis, formerly of Orlando City SC, has been officially named the head coach of the United States Men's National Team U23 team. Your thoughts? Good move? Bad move? Does it matter?
I don't know if it's a good move. Kreis is conformed to the system that they're going to play. I mean, this is a kind of a thing that most good, you know, the good soccering countries do, the good soccer balling countries do, is there is a system and a way of playing from the top down. And I don't know if Jason Kreis is a from the top down kind of a coach. He's always ran a 4-4-2 diamond or 4-2-3-1 of some sort. There, you know, he did it with RSL with success, but the RSL team was very, very good at an age in MLS where spending didn't always exactly equal wins. And they had a lot of really good players on that squad. Now, you know, you saw his problems when he got to Orlando City, when he got to, New York City FC. You know, there was decent teams out there, but they weren't that great. Like, you know, he just wasn't able to get the best out of certain players. He always had them playing a certain way that didn't quite work. And I hope that Jason Kreis, is 100% on board with how Berhalter and how more or less how, Ernie Stewart and the technical staff, wants the U.S. soccer system to look. Think that's the most important thing for me. How does it look? How does that go together? If Jason Kreis can put this team in a good position to win, and is getting them used to the system that they will be playing when they potentially move on, some of these guaranteed to move on to the full national team, but when some of these other players ever get that chance, they will understand how they are supposed to be playing, how they're supposed to fit in their roles, for the national team. I think that's going to be really big for them going forward. So we'll see how it goes, but, don't waste, Tim Weah and Josh Sargent's presence on that team as well. That's the number one thing.
Excellent stuff, Dan. Let's move on. We're going to play a game right now, listeners, of buy, sell, and hold. We are going to take a look at the top three teams and the bottom three teams in both the Eastern and Western Conference in MLS and say that we are stock traders in, you know, in the MLS stock market. Dan, we are going to, you know, Major League Stocks. We are going to play buy, sell, hold, where either we are going to be buying stock of a team, we are going to be selling stock of a team, or assuming we are going to operate under the presumption that we have some, and we're going to choose to hang on to it. We're going to start with DC United, Dan. DC United is undefeated in MLS play so far. They have two fantastic home wins over teams that were in the playoffs last year, and then kind of a meh nil-nil draw against New York City FC. Wayne Rooney got his first hat trick in MLS play. Dan, are you buying or selling DC United stock right now?
I actually think I'd be buying as much DC United stock as I can, because I think it's only going to get higher. From what I've seen so far, the Eastern Conference looks bad, and DC United are not a turd, but they're not the, you know, not the whole shiniest of the turds kind of a thing, but DC United look really, really good. And all you need to see is what they did against RSL, last week. I know a lot of it, you know, was kind of compounded by, the penalty kick decision that was kind of 50-50 for some in there. And then there was the initial sending off, for the high boot, which was 100% the right red card call there. But they've really dismantled an RSL team that when they want to bunker down and be defensively, tight, they can do it. This is a team so far in RSL that had looked pretty good throughout the first two. You know, they get a draw in the first game against Houston, and then they go and they beat Vancouver in their home opener. I think there's a lot more to come from DC though. I think that they're just starting to grow into it. Lucho Acosta hasn't gotten firing yet. The guy who scored the wonderful golazo off the corner kick there. That was his first goal, and he's just starting to get into it. I think when you see Rooney, Acosta, and him firing, and Paul Areola darting in at the back post, you know, Segura's already been a good fit, but they also, Junior Moreno, in the midfield has been wonderful for them. So, this DC team, I don't know if I could buy enough stock on them.
I don't know that I'm buying all the stock up that I can, but I definitely am buying. I'm holding on to what I have, and I'm buying more of it. You know, they've got a really favorable schedule going up. I know anytime that they have a home game, they're, you know, more likely than not going to get a result in that one. There was an interesting point that kind of sold me on it. I don't remember when it was, but there was a, it was Taylor Twellman on a national broadcast, and DC United, Dan, I think plays, travels in terms of just their MLS play going to road games is either the least or the second least number of miles traveled in the entire MLS. I think two of the three Cascadia teams come towards them. I think both Los Angeles teams are going to them as well. I think that, you know, their only real long road trip to the Pacific time zone is going to be at Avaya Stadium, if I'm not mistaken. And we saw what Wayne Rooney was capable of doing coming in midseason and not having to do a whole lot of travel. I'm hesitant to hold on to all that stock for the entirety of the season just because I think at some point that some level of travel is going to deteriorate Rooney's production on some level, and I do still kind of wonder, you know, is DC gonna re-sign Lucho to a long-term extension? Is PSG gonna come back in the summer? Is Europe somewhere going to come calling as well? But in terms of just right now, through, let's say, the start of the Gold Cup, I'm definitely buying DC United stock, and I think it's only going to get higher. Let's move on to the Columbus Crew, Dan. They are also 2-0-1. They have two wins over some relatively pedestrian MLS competition. And then on the opening day of the season, they got a 1-1 draw against New York Red Bulls, who had to play midweek in CCL. I am holding on my Columbus Crew stock, Dan. I'm not buying any more of it. That said, I'd say I had more than most people did at the beginning of the season. You know, this team and the roster as it's assembled is still built to win now. Gaston Saro has been absolutely fantastic at center back. I think for at least right now, you've got enough going on offensively that's good. Will Trapp and Arthur are great in the midfield. Giassi's artist is going to continue to score when you get him the ball. And, you know, with the new ownership group coming in, I anticipate that the Crew are probably going to be spending a little bit more in the summer, and certainly in the coming offseason. I still have some concerns about Pipa Higuain's health and just what he's going to be able to produce at his age. But given that I was still, I think, relatively high on this team going into the season, I am holding my above average amount of Columbus Crew stock. Dan, what are you doing with your Crew stock?
I think I'm going to hold as well. I actually might be a little bit inclined to sell maybe in the coming weeks. There are a lot of good things about this team, but their number one issue last year was that they didn't score enough goals, and I don't know if that's entirely fixed because the production from the wide players is not there, and Pipa Higuain's production is starting to slow down. So I'm going to hold on them, but I might be more inclined to sell as we go further on into the season. Just not fully sold on everything from them yet. It looks a bit more of a proactive and dynamic, I'd say more of a protagonist system than what Berhalter was doing with them last year. But I think that was a way of kind of making up their deficiencies and being able of not getting enough wide production. So whether or not they do, as you said, new ownership might bring in a new player. If they can sign a DP guy who's going to come in and score goals, then I might hang on to their stock a little while longer and maybe buy it up just before they do get him into that squad. But I think right now, if Justin Merrim and Pedro Santos's level of goal scoring production continues to be at the level that it is, I think Columbus is going to run into some problems. So I'm going to hold for now, but I'm leaning towards selling relatively soon.
Our last top team in the Eastern Conference, third place Toronto FC. They're one of only two perfect teams left in MLS play. They are 2-0. Dan, they got a 2-1 win over the Philadelphia Union with Michael Bradley trolling all of U.S. men's national team Twitter, and then a bit of a chaotic game on Sunday against the New England Revolution at home. Dan, are you buying or selling stock in the Reds?
I'm gonna buy it actually right now because I think it's better for them. Alejandro Pozuelo, when he does come into the side, is going to be a bit of a game changer for them. And then you have, so you already know he's coming into the side. Jozy Altidore, came on the field and instantly changed the game for them. I am a big Jozy fan. I'm a big fan of them getting more, on the attacking side for them. I think that was the issue last year, was just a consistent attack. and a consistent attacking threat in some midfield, all the health issues that caused their problems. So right now I'm going to buy Toronto stock just because I think a better time to sell might come on long later in the year. But Alejandro Pozuelo is going to come, and I think he's going to do very good things with them. I think you're going to see them continue a very good start.
I am buying stock in the Reds as well. Maybe not as much as you alluded to buying, Dan. I think really it's not the start for me. It's the officially inking down Pozuelo and then knowing when he's coming. You know, I think the team's going to be fine until his actual arrival comes in and he's fit and ready with the team. I think the rest of them is going to be okay. I'm leaning towards saying that CCL was maybe a blip or just a really, really bad game in that first leg that they just ultimately couldn't overcome. And while fans might be remembering that and having recency bias with that, those two games mattered zero in terms of impacting their overall standings in the game. So if they're able to put that behind them, figure things out with the club, with the team as they have assembled, with whatever's going on with the center backs, I think they're going to be okay. I don't know that I have this team finishing third in the Eastern Conference, but I definitely don't have them finishing right now as low as they were last season. And for those reasons, I am buying stock in Toronto FC. Let's move on to the bottom of the Eastern Conference, Dan. We'll start with this 10th place, Chicago Fire. They have 1 point on the season with 2 losses and 1 draw. Dan, are you buying, selling, or lighting fire to your Chicago Fire stock?
I'm actually going to buy just a little bit of them because I think at some point when you get Nico Gaitán in there, this is already a team that American Soccer Analysis doesn't have the data from the most recent match week updated in there, but through 2 games, despite them only getting 1 point out of those games, they still were within, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So they were 10th in the league in expected goals for, through those first 2 games. And they only, they bagged a couple out of them. I think that they're a team that creates good chances. You saw them have a good start at least last weekend. I know they ended up with the loss on that one, but, they didn't play well at the beginning of the match against Seattle. That fourth goal, kind of comes down to just them throwing numbers forward. I don't think it's fair. I think Seattle has problems, which I'll allude to later, despite their hot start. However, I do think the Chicago Fire team is going to get better once they get, Nico Gaitán in there. So, I think they've really, they're low right now, but I really do think that they're kind of, once Nikolic starts converting his chances and once Gaitán comes in, and starts playing well, maybe even if they make the decision to make, to not play Nikolic and CJ Sapong at the same time. If they make that decision, or if they, if Nico just starts getting his chances and Chicago's goal scoring level goes up, I think they've created good chances. They've got a good system in place for it. Their back line obviously has concerns, but I think they are better than what their record says. I think they will be better than what their record says in the long run. So I'm going to buy some Chicago stock. Very little bit of it, but I think right now I'm buying it just because I think it's at the lowest that it'll possibly be.
Mm-hmm. I am holding on to my Chicago Fire stock. I'm not really sure what to make of this team. I think Gaitán's going to be a nice addition to it, but I still have some serious reservations about the midfield with the exception of Dax McCarty. And I think we're just going to have to get used to that out of necessity, Bastian Schweinsteiger's a center back for this team. And I think that's not an indictment on him as a player, but I think that has to be a very strong statement in terms of where your team is and isn't and what it means for the club. So I'm holding on the Chicago Fire stock. I agree with you. I'm not sure it's going to get any lower, Dan, but I'm not sure it's going to get any higher. I think Philadelphia Union are better than the record has suggested. They're just 1 point, Chicago are just 1 point off of Atlanta. I have to think Atlanta's going to get up above them. I didn't have this team being a playoff team. I don't think that now, even with Gaitán, that they are going to make the playoffs. So I don't see their stock fluctuating significantly in any situation. So I might just be waiting for, someone with MLS recency bias to see them, get a big road win, where maybe Nikolic goes completely off and then sell that stock to that person who is extremely impressed. Let's move on to the New England Revolution, Dan. They also have 1 win. They have 2 losses and, or they also have 1 point with the Chicago Fire. They have played three games. They have two losses and one draw. That one draw was the opening game of the season against FC Dallas. Dan, I am selling all the stock, not that I had a whole lot left, in the New England Revolution that I can right now. I think this is going to get worse before it ends up getting better. I'm not sure that I like any of the additions that they've made, and I'm starting to really wonder, like, something has to be going on where where Brad Friedel is just having to completely tear this thing down and move it up. Just, you know, you had last season, you had Lee Wynn pretty much want out, and he was vindicated in that trade. You had Kellen Rowe ultimately want out. I'm not sure how happy Diego Fagundes is right now in this situation. You know, maybe in the long run, 3-4 years from now, Brad Friedel's going to, you know, be vindicated in terms of the locker that he's building right now. But if that is happening, it's going to have to be by taking a step backwards or two this year in order to take multiple step backward next year. And this is going to get worse before it gets better. I'm not sure I had any left, but I'm selling what I do have.
Yeah, New England. I'm definitely selling. If I have any, I think they're probably the worst team in the Eastern Conference, save for Orlando City. The only thing that can really save Orlando City is their attack, that I think is a little bit, much more dangerous than what New England's got, what New England has going on for them. So, like you said, I just don't see them getting any better. I would sell off as much as I can at the moment, just because I don't see them being a major player in any way, shape, or form, or having any kind of performances here that make you kind of raise your eyebrows and go, maybe they are an actually interesting team. Nothing from what I've seen from the first few games, has really impressed me at all. You know, they blew a late lead against, Toronto. They did not look good in their home opener. They looked relatively toothless. And then they didn't look good in the game against Dallas, which was a absolute snooze fest. So, I'm selling if I have anything left on New England stock.
Let's move on to the Philadelphia Union, who are currently last in the Eastern Conference at 12. Like New England and Chicago, they have 1 point with two losses and one draw. A little bit of shell shock for them to open up the season against Toronto FC, as we just talked about. And then a red card for Marco Fabian against Sporting Kansas City. Dan, your take on where the Union are, and are you duping or not duping?
I'm duping just because I think their offense is going to end up scoring some goals. The one thing that I've noticed on there is looking at some of their stuff, they have some of the highest, chance creation and expected goals leverage. They just don't have people putting it in. And the question is, over the long haul of the season, is either do they start putting it in, or is it proven that these guys aren't putting the ball in the back of the net? Still scratching my head at CJ Sapong being the one of the striker group to go, but that's what happens, I guess. And he's kind of showing out in Chicago. So, Philadelphia, very, interesting what's going on there. Their defense, I don't think is great. But, you know, they've shown that they can create chances. So far, Andre Blake will save them enough, that I think they'll end up turning out fine. Marco Fabian really has yet to find his footing in the league as well. We'll see if that happens this weekend, which is in a pretty good match for them. So, we'll see what happens with them. But I think Philadelphia, I'm still holding on because, I mean, they do have the potential to kind of bomb out and tank, just because of the fact that they don't seem to be converting their chances. However, I just still think there's too much quality in there for them to not really turn things around. So I'm going to hold on it. But I don't know if Philadelphia stock is low enough yet, for me to consider, you know, flash buying it just because it's at a point that I think it's low.
I'm holding on to my Union stock as well. You know, we knew with the tactical switch to being more of a pressing team that this was going to take a little bit of time. And I'm still, off of our conversation last week, Dan, I'm still not sure that they ultimately ended up winning that trade with CJ Sapong. You know, you have to figure at some point, a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while, that Fafa Pigo or Corey Burke are going to score a goal and then breathe a massive sigh of relief and then settle down and actually be the players that they were capable of being in 2018. Obviously, you know, Marco Fabian's just coming into the team. He's new to the team, new to MLS, got the red card, you know, ultimately hasn't played, only played, you know, one full 90 minutes, in his debut against Toronto FC. I have to think they're going to be better. So I'm holding, but I'm definitely wary and watching the stock to see whether or not it's going to jump up, if they're going to figure things out, or if they're maybe going to take their lumps, a little bit further, maybe even into the summer. Let's move on to the Western Conference, Dan. We will start with the 3-0 Seattle Sounders. They have 9 points with a +7 goal differential. They dismantled FC Cincinnati. They got a comprehensive win over Colorado Rapids, and then they produced the dumpster fire that was the Chicago Fire in a noon game on St. Patrick's Day, or I'd say St. Patrick's Day weekend on Saturday. Dan, how are you feeling about the Sounders stock?
I think it's at its highest right now, and I'd actually might sell some off. I won't say it's at its complete highest. I do think they're a very good team. I think they're a playoff team, in fact. But, you know, I'm not entirely impressed with their, like, Cincinnati. They caught them at a bad time. Cincinnati didn't have Alan Cruz or Kenny Saif, who through those two games that they have had them have made a marked improvement on FC Cincinnati's overall ability. I think Seattle, has a wonderful attack, and I think they're a very good team. But right now, I think they're kind of joyriding early, an early start. I don't know if it's going to sustain itself. Injuries do play a bit role on a team that plays on turf, for 50% plus of the year. And then you also have, the fact that their back line really isn't that great. They've looked porous at times. You know, Cincinnati didn't do much against them. Colorado, we know what their chance creation issues are right now. And then on top of it, they go to Chicago, who's supposed to be a very, very bad team, and Chicago almost makes a comeback out of it. So, I think they're a team that eventually they will be the ones that will be their own downfall. At some point of the year, I think they're going to take quite a hit. And I won't say I think they're going to take quite a hit, but I have a feeling that they will. It just kind of comes for them. And while it is a good start, like I said, I still have a lot of backline concerns for them and overall defensive, weaknesses. I mean, they could go pedal to the metal for as much as they want, but if they don't bag enough goals in doing so, I think they leave themselves open later in games. So, Seattle for me, I'm going to sell off a little bit of it. I'll sell off half my shares for Seattle right now, just because I think it's at its absolute peak, because we have not seen Houston and San Jose, or not Houston, it sounds like Houston and Sporting Kansas City and, in some of the teams that were from that side that were within the CONCACAF Champions League really get their wheels turning. And I think once those two do, I think you're going to see a lot more different, feel to the Western Conference once they get going.
I'm selling as much of the Seattle Sounders stock as I can, Dan. I agree with you that I think it's about as high, as it's going to be. I also think that they've had a really, really favorable schedule. You know, you knew that it was going to be FC Cincinnati coming in and playing in their first game and the huge atmosphere and everything, that, you know, that was going to be a favorable matchup, for the Seattle Sounders. You know, I think it was an intriguing, measuring stick for the Colorado Rapids, taking on Seattle, but, you know, then Seattle had a fantastic opening 15 minutes, the Rapids had a terrible opening 15 minutes, and then you went on the road and, you know, a relative cupcake game as far as Western Conference teams in the Pacific time zone having to travel to the Central time zone in the Chicago Fire. I don't think you're going to get an easier opening schedule in terms of playing home games, playing teams at bad times, and teams that were going to start the season off slow. And for that reason, I think everybody's just oodling over Jordan Morris, you know, who's probably already won the, you know, the comeback player of the year award. So I'm selling all that stock just because I think it's just completely out of whack. I still think the Sounders are a really good team. I think that they're going to make the playoffs. And if they're able to play like this throughout much of the stretch of the season, they could even challenge LAFC and Sporting Kansas City, who I would say are the cream of the crop in the Western Conference right now. But I just think their stock's so high that I'm going to sell all of it and then make all my money. Let's move on to LAFC, Dan. They are 2-0-1. They had a 2-2 draw over the weekend against New York City FC, and then two very comprehensive home wins over Sporting Kansas City and the Portland Timbers. I am holding on to my LAFC stock, Dan, because, well, I think they've been good. I think there are some things that they need to work on a little bit. I'm still not sure that Bob Bradley's figured out the situation as far as Christian Ramirez starting all three games, but then Adama Diomande subbing in for all three of those games in terms of who he likes there. You know, they've still got Andre Horta, who is still getting healthy. A little fun fact, Dan, LA Soccer Twitter has decided that they've named Andre Horta Andre Horchata. So I think that they've got some room to improve. I'm also just not sure that with, you know, they caught Sporting at a good time in terms of the CCL schedule. They caught Portland Timbers, who were on the road, and obviously have a very long road stretch before the renovations in Providence Park are complete. And I'm still not sure what NYCFC is right now. So I think LAFC, you know, they could improve by 10%, and I wouldn't be completely shocked. They could dip a little bit by 10%, and I wouldn't be completely shocked. So for those reasons, I'm holding, and I'm waiting to see what else happens. I still think this is a very good team, and I'm still glad that I have LAFC stock in my portfolio. Dan, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm buying LAFC stock, just a little bit more of it. I like what I've seen from them. I think they are a good team. The team, you saw DC United, right? Their first couple of games, they played Houston off the pitch. They've played RSL off the pitch, but then they go in the struggle at New York City FC just because of how crappy that field playing situation is. LAFC made a very good job, did a very good job of getting the result in New York City. That is a massive field advantage for NYCFC, just because it takes teams like DC, like LAFC, that like to play free-flowing, good soccer and stuff like that. And it condenses them down to a point where there's, you know, the spaces and the gaps aren't what they were. And it just kind of cramps everything, when it gets down onto that field. And I think LAFC did a good job of getting through it, creating chances. And then, of course, you have Carlos Vela to take care of said chances for them, even taking care of that penalty kick. When Carlos Vela is playing the way he has through the first few games, if he continues that run of form throughout the entire season, I don't know if there are a whole lot of teams that are going to be able to stop him. For me, LAFC, is at the premier level of, the Western Conference at the moment. And right now, the premier level of the league. I mean, they are the team to beat. They should have the target on their back. Because they're the only team that has gone out and put out a complete performance. Road wins are hard in MLS. To go and get a draw in New York City at a midday game. I mean, that's a weird time. I believe it is a weird time frame because that kicks off at 10 o'clock local time. No, not 10 o'clock. It kicks off at noon local time in LA. Nobody ever is ready to play on a Sunday game at noon, because everybody's recovering from their hangovers from Saturday night in LA. So, what they did in New York City FC was good enough. I just think they're the top team, in the league. And so, I'm going to buy some of that, until I feel like, I've seen a performance that maybe tells me that they're about to drop off. And I don't think NYCFC's their performance against NYCFC, really gave me any, that kind of indicator.
Well said, Dan. I think Hunter maybe wants to buy some LAFC stock in there, you know, and invest in his dog treat futures. Let's move on to Houston Dynamo. Like LAFC, they have 7 points off of 3 games played, 2 wins and 1 draw, albeit against some relatively weak competition. And the Dynamo have yet to play on the road in MLS play. They have not left BBA Compass Stadium with the exception for their 2 road games in CONCACAF Champions League. Dan, I am selling my Houston Dynamo stock as it currently stands. You know, they got Montreal, you know, who's been kind of marauding sort of all over the place. You know, they were at San Jose, then at Houston, and then at Orlando. You know, as far as like just radius of distance they have to travel, that's about as long of a road trip that you can have for them. You know, they had who else did they play? I believe that they played Orlando, and I can't remember. They've had a relatively cupcake schedule, if you ask me. Oh, also Vancouver. I think the schedule's been really friendly to them. I think they got some good things going for them in CCL that they're not going to have now that they are officially out of CCL. And I still think this is a team that is a little bit inconsistent. So I think maybe people are buying into Houston Dynamo with everything that they've done. You know, I'm definitely holding, if I have individual stock, I'm definitely holding on to my Mauro Minota stock, but as far as a team level, I'm just not sure that Houston Dynamo, like Seattle to a certain extent, are going to be any higher than they have been, just given the schedule and the fact that they've played 3 home games.
I'm buying Houston stock, actually. I really like what I've seen from them. I think that the addition of Struna on their back line has really shored up a whole lot of questions that I had there. AJ De La Garza at right back isn't your bomb forward right back kind of a guy, but he is stable enough on that back line to help out that defensive issues. I believe in the past they were playing Jahlil Anibaba and a few other random guys out at that right back position that just didn't quite get it done. I like what I've seen from their backline, which I think was their biggest concern from last season. They score plenty of goals. They score fast and furious, but they weren't able to finish off teams and finish them off late in games. They kept on giving it up. And so far, what they've done in their league, I know they weren't playing against top quality opponents per se. However, what they were able to do while keeping Manotas and Elise and Kyoto on the bench for the most part of those three games due to their CONCACAF Champions League involvement, what they were able to do in the league to get through that, I think should be impressive. I don't think should be taken for granted. Mauro Manotas, the dude looks like he could probably score 20 goals. He has a nose for goal scoring. He's got some really good creative forces behind him. And then I think the biggest thing is Memo Rodriguez, and his step up and ability. You've seen him, some score the golazo, and then him with some mop up duty. I really like what I've seen from the homegrown player and him. I don't know if I can buy enough Houston stock, but I really like what I've seen from Houston so far. And I think their stock will continue to grow, as their backline continues to prove to people that they are, as good as they have been so far. So for me, Houston, they won't be a top three team in the Western Conference necessarily, but they will be a bona fide playoff team in the Western Conference. And I think people are going to start, kind of jumping on their bandwagon here as we go. So I'm going to buy up some of that Houston stock.
Let's move on to the bottom teams in the Western Conference. We'll start with 10th place Portland Timbers. They have played three games, all on the road. They have two losses and one draw. That one draw coming in the Snow Classic 03 against Colorado Rapids. That was a 3-3 draw in which the Timbers played up a man for the better part of an hour. Dan, I guess I'm technically holding because I'm neither buying nor selling Portland Timbers stock, but I'll start off by saying I didn't really have any to begin the season. Just with the road schedule that they had, how much traveling that they were going to do, I didn't think that they were going to get off to a hot start at all. I wasn't expecting them to be anywhere near the playoff picture until they reopened up Providence Park. So I guess technically I'm holding because I didn't have an end to begin with, and I don't think it's going to get better anytime soon, especially with them getting red cards in back-to-back games. Dan, your thoughts on Timbers stock right now?
I might actually buy it because I do think it's going to be at its lowest right now. So if I'm going to buy it, I want to sell it off later. I am going to buy it now when I think they're at their lowest. They haven't looked good in their first couple of games. Their 1 point is in the Snow Classico, where they gave up a goal down a man very late in the game. So they haven't looked great. They need a Pierce, Jeremy Ibabise is a good, serviceable backup striker. He is not their top option. They do have backline issues. If they're willing to spend $10 million for Eduardo Vargas, I would hope that they'd be willing to spend for more help on that back line. And they have in the past done a good job of upgrading their backline issues. So, for me, I'm buying Portland just because I know what's coming on the back end of the year. Where I'm worried and start selling off the stock, or I don't say I'm buying necessarily, but I'm definitely holding, maybe buying up just a little bit because I know the shares, quote unquote, will be low right now. But, I see them getting better in the end of the year. Especially when they have all those, that run of games at home, that they're going to have, in what is going to the stadium renovations that are going to make that place even more louder than it already is. It's going to hold in noise a lot better. I won't say a lot better, but even more than it already does, because that place is just loud always. I am all for Portland buying it. I'm not surprised with where they're at, but I'd buy up a little bit of Portland stock just because my belief is that they'll add at least either at the latter part of the window or in the summer, and will capitalize on all of those home games at the end of the year and bump themselves into playoff position. Then everybody starts talking again. Oh, are they going to be the dark horse in the playoffs again like they were last year and make it all the way to the cup finals? That's when you want to sell. So for me, I'm buying up my Portland stock.
Let's move on to the last two teams in the Western Conference now. I'll lump them together because there's a lot of similarities between the two. Vancouver Whitecaps and San Jose Earthquakes, both sitting on 0 points off of three games played. They both play at home and away. Obviously, all six of those games combined have been losses for a combined goal differential of minus 10. Both teams have a new head manager at the front of the team. They've got shifting lineups in Vancouver. San Jose hasn't really had a whole lot of change, and, you know, Matias hasn't had a whole lot of change to spend, and Wanda Watch is still going on. Dan, you know, are we kicking them out of the stock market at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't have any San Jose stock bought up before the year. I figured that this doesn't look great. They're in a whole world of trouble. Vancouver as well. I think those are the two teams that I had pegged in the Western Conference the most to be at the bottom of the barrel. I'm not surprised they are where they are, and I don't think they're going to do a whole lot of moving. So if I had any stock in any of them, I might as well just sell it now. Maybe use it to go buy up some more Portland stock.
Well said. I'll completely agree with you. I didn't have much stock from either of these two teams. You know, if I did have any San Jose, I might be spending it. I might be selling it off just to buy other stocks elsewhere. You know, like you said, I'm kind of, I don't know if the rumor mill has come up again about Matias Almeida potentially leaving, but I don't have any belief in these two teams in 2019. You know, I'm holding on to my Nick Lima stock to see if he's able to make the Gold Cup. But other than that, you know, like my next stock that I have in that, might actually be stock in the bar at Avaya Stadium, because I think the one thing that's going to sell well at Avaya Stadium is going to be beer after all of those Quakes losses. That does it for our game of buy, sell, hold. Dan, let's move on to rapid fire. We've just got two topics. I will throw it to you first. Earlier today, DC United signed a 16-year-old homegrown Griffin Yao, presumably I think might be involved in Loudoun United, their USL affiliate. Your thoughts on this, what it means for the DC Academy, and I mean, it's, you know, is this kid just going to be falling around Ray Rooney all day?
Yeah, he should be. The kid's got talent. Griffin Yao is a very good player. He was one of the most impressive guys at the most recent U17 friendlies. Very dynamic player, very good nose for goal. He did score this weekend for Loudoun United in their opener, got a deflection. I like what I've seen from Griffin Yao, both at the youth stage and with USL and Loudoun United. So far, last game looked really well. So I'm excited for this one. I think it's a good move for DC United. To see them kind of, so they've done the whole thing. A lot of teams like to try and build their academy first or build something else first before they go out and spend the money. They went out and spent the money, but now you're starting to see their academy come to fruition with guys like Durkin, with guys like Ian Harkes, and then you have now Griffin Yao getting into the mix. Bill Hamid was the original, but it is nice to see them continue to bring guys from their youth academy and the Washington, D.C. metro area that is a very talented area, and to kind of see players finally kind of come through that. So excited for Yao. I doubt he gets a whole lot of playing time this year. You're going to see it most with Loudoun United, but D.C. United is smart to go and get him to a contract, because that kid will be in Europe before you know it. To be honest, he's got that kind of quality about him. So he may be, if you're looking for any comparison in the rise that I think Yao will end up having, reminds me a lot of a Josh Sargent type. The dude's a very clinical goal scorer. You will like what you see from him in the attack. Watch Loudoun United this year if you want to watch some of those good young players, because he's one of those guys. But good move for DC. Smart. Get him into that roster, whether or not you play him a whole lot before he moves to Europe, because he will. I think is a good way to make sure you get a transfer fee out of it, for sure.
Well said, Dan. Moving on some sad news. Over the weekend in the New York Red Bulls game, Florian Philot had to exit the game relatively early due to injury, and he confirmed on Twitter today that he has torn his ACL. You might remember him missing a lot of the season last year because he also tore his ACL. So two torn ACLs in less than 2 years. Pouring out for Florian Philot and just the New York Red Bulls depth chart right now, given, you know, how they're a little bit worse for wear because of CCL and a bunch of guys called up for upcoming international friendly period. You know, absolutely gutted for him as a player. He's a fantastic player. You know, I hope that he comes back better, Dan, but we've seen pretty regularly it takes a while for you to come back from an ACL tear and you are not the same player. I shudder to think the kind of player Florin Vallot is going to be relative to what we saw he was capable of in MLS after, you know, this second major setback in back-to-back years. Get well soon, man. Let's move on to Pick'ems, Dan. We have just one game because most of the MLS games, all five of them this week, were not that interesting. So we'll just do the U.S. national team. Dan, we got the United States taking on Ecuador. This will be on Thursday, the 21st of March. It'll be at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2 in Orlando, at Orlando City Stadium, yes?
Yes.
Yes. Dan, who you got and why?
I'm going to go with U.S. men's national team in this one. They play well at Orlando. They played well in that Panama game down there. It is a rocking atmosphere. I do think it will be – there will – it doesn't look like there's a whole lot of tickets sold, but regardless, I think American Outlaws will be nice and loud and provide a good environment for the match. The U.S. men's national team, I think, is in a good state at the moment. You're going to see good things from them. I think their system we'll talk a lot more about the system in the coming weeks after these performances, just because I think the system sets them up for success the best that it possibly can, or in the best way that a system possibly can. So I'll go with them against Ecuador at the moment. I'll give it a nice boring 2-1 win. It won't be pretty per se, but it'll be effective and they'll get the job done at the end with some.
I was going to say the exact same thing, Dan. I think the only other thing that I'll throw in, because I'm a ginger and have complete bias towards Tim Ream, who is a St. Louis native, I'll say that Tim Ream gets a goal on a set piece in this one because he'll be so happy to be playing with a team that isn't, soon to be relegated Fulham Football Club. That does it for us tonight, Dan. It is time for last words. Where can people find you on Twitter, and do you have any last words?
You can find me on Twitter at SperryDaniel94. Last words, don't have a whole lot. I think this is, I'll say this after the performance, for Sporting Kansas City against the team from Panama, Independiente, there was some interesting comments made that the performance was, that it wasn't a good game to watch and their performance and approach was quote pragmatic. I don't think that is the case at all. I mean, if you watched them, they were throwing numbers forward like crazy and chance after chance after chance. There was never any moment, I think, of desperation from them. Every single chance that they went through was thoroughly executed well. In creating said chance, the goalkeeper stood on his head. I believe CONCACAF credited him with 15 saves, but that wasn't about right. I believe Opta had him around 9 or 10 total saves. I think the goalkeeper, regardless, had an insanely good game against them and stopped multiple would-be goals that would have put the result out of question earlier on. Their back line was throwing their bodies at everything, and at some point something gives late in a game like that, and then they poured it on. The score ended 3-0. Peter Ramirez afterwards first comment was it probably should have been 10, and it very well could have if some of those chances had gone in. Daniel Shalloway had two cracks at it that were blocked by a flailing defender. This Sporting Kansas City team, I won't say they've been sleepwalking through MLS, but it feels and looks like they've almost been sleepwalking through MLS. And they've got 4 points out of the first three games, including two tough road trips earlier on in the year, while at the same time being the last team in MLS standing in the CONCACAF Champions League and the only one to beat their Liga MX opponent. Props to them and props to what they've done. I think you will see Sporting Kansas City climb the charts in MLS as the season goes on. This team's fit. This team is really, really fit, and I think you're going to start seeing what they've been able to do in terms of some of the from being around the club every day. You see some of the science things and the recovery science stuff that they've been doing with their facility in conjunction with the Children's Mercy and Cerner and stuff like that. And it is incredible to see them be able to, Peter Ramiz basically ruled out almost the same lineup for three straight games, and they, won two and got a draw in Colorado, where in a place that they hadn't won, they still haven't won since 2014. So be ready for Sporting Kansas City because they are coming. I think this will be interesting. This matchup against Monterrey as it goes in, that is going to be the one to watch. Your last MLS hope in the CONCACAF Champions League. But I think probably if you're looking at it, maybe before the start of the tournament, you would have said they wouldn't have been your only hope. Or your best hope to win the tournament. However, they've proved to be the best hope out of any of those teams to win the tournament. So be on the watch out for them and throw your MLS support behind them unless you're an RSL fan and can't bring yourself to do it.
Not a lot of people are that excited probably about FC Dallas taking on Colorado Rapids this weekend, Dan. That game will be on Unimas, but I am excited about it because it will once again be the Acosta Baji Bowl. The two players who were traded this past summer to their former teams, that was the team that they started their professional career with, and then ultimately now are playing their former teams. And another interesting wrinkle, Axel Schuberg has worked his way back into the starting lineup, into the good graces of Anthony Hudson. Danny Wilson being really bad at Seattle will certainly help with that. I spoke with Axel after the game on Sunday, the Dan Matt Derby, and he said that he was really excited to see his former teammate and a player who he was drafted in the same year with. So, you know, two teams that I think are both going to be hungry to try and get their first, a win in the game, and two teams that I think are two players who I think are going to be excited to maybe try and prove their former team wrong. That's going to be really, really interesting to see. And obviously, Don Baji's going to be going up against, you know, a lot of his old friends, you know, from the 2016 team, etc. So we'll see how that goes. I'm really interested to see, if nothing else, you know, I'm sure there's going to be some really, really good trash talk in multiple languages on the field at Toyota Stadium in Frisco, Texas. With that, listeners, that does it for us. You can follow me on Twitter at LWSMattPollard. Check out all of our content at LastWordOnSoccer.com and at LastWordSC across all social media platforms. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarf just as you get really excited for the season kicking on at RoughneckScarves.com. We'll see you next week, folks.